Good afternoon. From the KTOO Newsroom, I'm Mike Lane, filling in for Yvonne Crumrie. Alaska State Troopers, Anchorage Police, the FBI, and several other agencies worked together to crack down on sex trafficking operations at illicit massage parlors in Anchorage and the Mat-Su. They disclosed the results of their year-long undercover investigation at a joint news conference Thursday. Alaska State Trooper Colonel Maurice Hughes says the probe led to 7 arrests and identified 11 vulnerable adults who had been exploited.
Individuals believed to be victims were contacted by investigators, offered advocacy, support, and also connected with resources and support organizations. These individuals were not the focus of the investigation. They were the reason for the investigation.
Hughes says the victims were from out of state or from foreign countries. None were from Alaska. Anchorage Police Chief Sean Case says investigations of this type are very complicated and take time because the victims were fearful of law enforcement.
To trust law enforcement in a situation that they traditionally don't trust law enforcement, it takes a special kind of cop to investigate these crimes. A cop that's really focused on the victims, focus on establishing those relationships, those dialogue, to get the victims where they're at a point where they can further the investigation.
Case says the investigation is far from over, that more work remains to be done. Case says his department plans to ask the Anchorage Assembly to pass a measure that will expedite trafficking investigations. Alaska Native people make up less than 20% of Alaska's population, but they represent more than 40% of the state's prison population. And when they're released, Alaska Native people have a 60% chance of ending up back in prison, the highest rate of all racial and ethnic groups in the state, according to the Alaska Department of Corrections. As part of a crime bill passed by the legislature 2 years ago, the Department of Corrections contracted with the Alaska Federation of Natives to conduct a study looking at ways to reduce the overrepresentation of Alaska Native people in the state's prison population. The study was released recently. AFN's Director of Government Relations, Kendra Kloster, was part of the team that put the study together. She told Alaska Public Media's Wesley Early that many issues surrounding Alaska Native incarceration can be attributed to historical traumas the population has faced in the state.
I think what's important here to first kind of set the stage in thinking about this, Alaska Native people had a restorative justice system where, you know, we're addressing and uplifting our youth and having our youth and elders together and growing up. And we had such a strong system in which there was support. When you come through colonization, you have a Western system that was built so much different than the way our Alaska Native people lived. You have a long history of trauma since contact that has been embedded into our communities, and those are traumas that are still living on today. And I think that that does have a lot of impacts onto what our current system is looking at. And so when we're looking at saying that we have these high rates, there's a number of things that need to be looked at and understood.
You mentioned that one of the recommendations the study puts forward is the expansion of restorative justice programs. How do those programs work differently from more Western justice systems, and why do you think they'd produce better outcomes?
I'm going to give kind of an example to help maybe highlight this. Let's say our youth have we'll call it a youthful indiscretion, and they, say, go out and do vandalism. In a Western system, you're looking at more of like, we're going to go to a court appearance. You're going to have something on your record. You're going to be put down a path that is not really looking toward restoring individuals and really just understanding that what happened. So in our restorative kind of justice programs and through a tribal court, you would see these youth come into a circle with our elders, with our aunties, with our uncles. They will love you up in a very stern kind of way. They're going to say, you know, we love you. You messed up, though. And what you're going to do now is you're going to go back to those individuals and you're going to do something to make them whole. And you're going to understand what that is. Maybe that's going in and fixing what they vandalized. Maybe that's going in and fishing for that family. You're going to hold some personal accountability to yourself and to the community and understanding that. that is a restorative justice system where we're understanding, we're uplifting our youth, we are taking them and making them part of the solution to fix what went wrong.
So a part of the study talks about the importance of keeping people in their communities, especially when it comes to things like parole requirements. Why do you think staying close to home matters so much for addressing recidivism rates?
Through the study, when we did interviews and surveys, we talked with individuals. This was something that came up pretty often is, let's say if you're from a rural community and you're in an urban hub, you go into a correctional system and you come out and you have parole and probation requirements that are keeping you in the city. However, maybe your home base is where you're going to have a better chance. You might have a home there, you have family support, but yet these probation and parole violation or requirements are not allowing you to go home, and you have to stay within that city. And if you don't have that support system, you could end up homeless, you could end up, you know, kind of re-back in the system because you don't have that support system. And so that had come up pretty often. And so that was one of the recommendations is, can we look at the probation and parole violations? What needs to change in there? And how are we supporting those individuals?
So in what ways do you think that the state can address some of these recommendations in sort of more immediate terms and then in the longer term?
Looking at the longer term, it's really looking at the preventative measures. And a lot of that is going to be putting effort into education, prenatal care, supporting parents. There is a lot of studies, not just ours, that we looked at. We did a literature review to see what other studies have said. And from, you know, 20, 30 years ago, they're saying the same thing. This isn't new information, as we really need to be making sure that we're supporting parents, that we're supporting kids from the very early ages. And I also want to say, cultural programs play such an important role in our lives, especially for Native people. We are connected to land. We're connected to our hunting and to our fishing. This is part of our wellness. This is part of who we are and our spirituality. This is something that we've talked a lot about within other organizations, and even following up on the study, is how are we building that into our correctional facilities, giving people that are there that connection to their culture, because that is part of the healing process and it's being missed.
That was AFN's Director of Government Relations, Kendra Kloster, speaking with Alaska Public Media's Wesley Early. The full study can be found on AFN's website, nativefederation.org. And normally, Alaska has three people at the U.S. Capitol arguing for federal land and natural resources policies that boost the state's economy. Last week, 150 Alaskans fanned out across the Capitol to make the case for their industries, ranging from drilling and mining to tourism and fishing. Alaska State Chamber President Katie Capozzi is an organizer of the lobbying mission, dubbed Alaskans on the Hill. She says the goal is to reach out to lawmakers representing other states.
So we heard from our senators, Senator Murkowski and Senator Sullivan, a couple years ago, that they needed our help, that they needed the real-life stories of Alaskans, that they can't do it all by themselves.
Industry priorities vary and sometimes conflict. Capozzi says the single issue almost all agree on is the need to speed up federal permitting.
We have a real opportunity because I think for the first time ever, a lot of renewable folks and oil and gas folks are working together to say we need this for all of our industries. So it's a kind of a unique moment in time.
The U.S. House has passed permitting reform bills, but it's not clear they can pass the Senate. Opponents are leery of shortcuts on environmental protection. Senator Lisa Murkowski told the Alaska Advocates not to forget that their industries need a strong workforce, too. She says that takes housing, good schools, and affordable health care for families. This was the third year for Alaskans on the Hill, and organizers expect to be back next year, too. And the U.S. Department of Agriculture announced last Wednesday that it has opened an Office of Seafood within the department. This first-of-its-kind office comes after years of advocacy from Alaska's congressional delegation and fishermen. The department said in a press release that the Office of Seafood will, quote, prioritize customer service and ease of navigation for American seafood cultivators, producers, and processors to access USDA programs, end quote. Secretary of Agriculture Brooke L. Rollins made the announcement during a news conference last Wednesday in conjunction with Alaska Senator Dan Sullivan. Sullivan celebrated the announcement virtually Thursday at ConFish, Kodiak's annual commercial fisheries trade show. He says this new office will allow Alaska fishermen to be treated like farmers under the department.
And this, I think, is the beginning of our ability of fishermen around the country, but especially Alaska fishermen, to start to plug in to the risk management programs that farmers access.
Caitlin Yeager is the Vice President of Policy and Outreach with the At-Sea Processors Association, a trade association that represents catcher-processor vessels in the Bering Sea pollock fishery. She told ComFish attendees on Thursday that the creation of the Office of Seafood is a win for all fishermen.
Fishermen are food producers, and they deserve every benefit that farmers are providing for them as well. Things like crop insurance, like low-interest loans. We have an aging fleet. We have aging infrastructure. And we need the same assurances that are provided to them.
Sterling Prout, a Bering Sea crabber from Kodiak and part owner of the fishing vessel Silver Spray, said in a press release that the Office of Seafood will open up new opportunities to expand the markets for American seafood. More information about the new office's resources can be found online at usda.gov/seafood. And that's the news from KTOO. Weather-wise, for tonight, we are expecting rain with an overnight low near 36, east winds at 5 miles per hour. More rain tomorrow, becoming showers with a high of 44, east winds at 5, those becoming northwest winds in the afternoon. Filling in for Yvonne Crumry, I'm Mike Lane. This is KTOO.